any hardship we have, I'm not saying it comes to us for a reason, but we can make a reason out of it. We can all find meaning from that hardship when we walk through it, and we can grow and we can learn and we can rise and elevate ourselves and learn to fly higher than we could have ever flown before.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Today's topic is going to be fascinating. We have Dr. Erica Harris from Vancouver. How are you today, Dr. Erica?
Good morning, Brad. I am very well, thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm awesome. It's chilly here. I'm ready for summer to come back because I like to be outside on my boat or playing golf or something that it doesn't involve cold weather.
Well, goodness, we are very lucky here in what's usually very rainy Vancouver for November, but we have just been blessed with gorgeous sunshine lately, and I am just thanking our lucky stars here. Yes.
Love it. Love your background there. So let's jump right in as we always do. From 2 months to live 12 years ago, to now helping people live their best life, what have you learned in that journey?
Gosh, that's a big question, my friend. So I'm a sports chiropractor by trade. As I call it in my quote unquote previous life, life before cancer, I had lived a life passionate about health and wellness, literally the poster child for health and wellness. I practiced what I preached as a sports chiropractor by every measure. I was always trying to inspire my audience and my community, my patients to live their healthiest lives. And literally, I practiced what I preached by every measure, as I said, hiking up every mountain, soaring down them all on my skis. And never in a million years would I have ever expected to be diagnosed what proved to be a very aggressive version of leukemia at the age of 35. I had just done a very routine lab test that clearly went very astray. I hadn't even complained of feeling sick or unwell, Brad. And I was literally standing in the Vancouver Aquarium when I got this random call saying, Is this Erica Harris? You need to avoid all public places and go to the nearest emergency room. I had still been nursing my youngest son at the time. And I was literally like, just climbing that ladder of life, you know, like loving life to the fullest, even at that point. So literally my world was pulled out from under my feet in the blink of an eye and seemingly never to return again. I faced relentless, seemingly insurmountable feats in my survival. And it's incredible that I'm here with you today. But yes, as you said, I did not respond even to the harshest of chemotherapy regimens known as salvage chemotherapy. I was devastatingly awarded a 2-month terminal prognosis. I was even denied all further medical care aside from palliative care. Moving forward, the same prognosis was reconfirmed by Fred Hutch, a leading leukemia institute out of Seattle. As you said, I'm here in Canada. So two internationally renowned institutions gave me the exact same prognosis. I fought to go home out of the palliative floor. If I had 2 months to live, I had a lot of living to do and a lot of preparations to do as well. As I said, I had these two beautiful babies. So I went home and I really prepared for the worst. I owned this power that this fire-breathing dragon of cancer had over me. And I wrote all the heartfelt memory albums for my children and babies with tears streaming down my face the whole time. But I also prepared for the best and expected the best, I should say, and pursued any and everything in natural healthcare realm, really adopted a life of mindfulness and meditation really for the first time, and just grew a lot of self-awareness. I really transformed within on this path. And from that, I miraculously achieved what's called a spontaneous remission in the medical realm, where you achieve a remission having had no medical intervention from that. Only then was I eligible to serve as a recipient for this life-saving bone marrow transplant, which serves as like the quote-unquote cure to prevent against relapse from such an aggressive leukemia. I then had this bone marrow transplant with thanks to this amazing stranger who rose to help from halfway around the world, believe it or not, in my time of need. He was the only one who proved to be my perfect match. My only brother, who's a surgeon back east, was not a match. And so this worldwide search had been hailed on my behalf. And this young mountaineering adventurer rose to help. His last name, believe it or not, is Hoppe. I call him my hope star. He really just gave me this second chance at life. I grew strong after this incredible bone marrow transplant. I was back to hiking really aggressive hikes here on the North Shore of Vancouver and throughout British Columbia. I was teaching my babies to ski in Whistler, and you have to be really physically fit for that, you know, when you're like leaning over with a three-year-old teaching them how to ski. And anyhow, so I was back in my groove, but this burst of health was very short-lived. And I soon, as on my hikes, people started to pass me, and I just couldn't seem to get in enough air. And my new hearty immune system had woken up, looked around from my donor, decided it didn't recognize my own lungs, and embarked on this fierce process of attack, literally obliterating my own lungs. And I fell to 80 pounds. I was crazy sick again, on full-time oxygen now. And my only chance of survival at that point was deemed to be a double lung transplant. That time was brutally hard to cope through. I was declining every single day. I lost the vision in my eyes through these steroid-related cataracts. I couldn't watch a movie. I couldn't read a book to get distracted. I just couldn't even drive. I lost my independence. I felt like I would walk across the kitchen and lose capacity of all bodily function. Life as I knew it was just so far gone, you know? And miraculously, I was given this incredible gift in August of 2015, where I was blessed with these new lungs. And I now breathe through the lungs of another, and I have the bone marrow of another flowing through all parts of me. And I faced several more feats in my survival as complications from the lung transplant, faced another year in the hospital. I used to get out of hospital every day and pick up my kids from school and make a family meal and race back to the hospital, living this crazy double life, but I needed to keep this sense of purpose. And 6 weeks after I was finally home from hospital, I then faced divorce. My husband chose to divorce, and I faced a move. I had to adapt to life as a single mom when I was barely back on my feet in my recovery. And I really had to learn how to like dust myself off and say, okay, now what? Like, I had to really reinvent myself. I couldn't return to work as a sports chiropractor given this world of COVID. I'm very immune suppressed and have to be conscious of my immune abilities to fight colds and bugs. And I'll never have the physical strength I used to have. So I couldn't return to work as a sports chiropractor. And so really had to shake it off and really reinvent myself. And as part of your question, you know, what have you learned? Probably the biggest lesson.
Hang on a second. I've got a couple of questions I want to throw in here. I won't forget that one. I mean, you said so many incredible things, Erica. Wow. First of all, you're a badass, and I'm so glad that you fought and continue to fight. And wow, I'm so glad that you're here with us today. Salvage chemo. What does that mean?
Gosh, yes. Thank you for asking. Gosh, that just needs to be renamed. There's so much in medicine that just goes without thought. And instantly when you hear this as a patient, I'm sure the MDs and the physicians mean so well in the terminology that they use. But as a patient, when you first hear this, and believe it or not, Brad, I heard I had been admitted again, hadn't complained of feeling sick or unwell. 3 weeks in, I realized I failed the first round of 24/7 chemotherapy measures done in the hospital. And they tell me 3 weeks in, Erica, you're going to need a round of salvage chemotherapy followed by a bone marrow transplant. And I said, like, what? This sounds brutal for one thing. A, I wanted to see somebody who had been through this exact course of treatment, a role model who could show me, pave out the path. But B, I said, salvage, like, what does this mean? Like salvage chemotherapy. And they said, well, this is our last available measure for you. Your cancer is so aggressive. And I couldn't compute it. Like I had literally just been diagnosed 3 weeks before, again, feeling completely well. Like I was hosting a big birthday party for my oldest son's 5th birthday party. We were planned a trip to the lake for a month-long holiday. My oldest was about to start kindergarten. We're in the midst of life as we knew it. Again, I was still nursing my youngest. Like we had so much on the go. And I just couldn't compute that this salvage chemotherapy, but it plays with your mind, right? Wow. You're like, okay, so I guess let's do this. But then it's always constantly in the back of your head. Well, what if this doesn't work? Because 3 weeks in, you're like, this can't be the last course of treatment. And then devastatingly, it didn't work. I think I had about 26% leukemic cells, Brad, when I first went into hospital. I had 67% leukemic cells when I then came out of hospital. Whoa. And I think I had close to 90% leukemic cells when I was given this terminal prognosis. I was incredibly sick. And people always say, they're like, oh, I bet you wouldn't do chemotherapy. But you bet your bottom dollar, Brad, I would do everything in my available power to be here for my children and leave no stone unturned. And I would 100% do that same path all over again.
So I found, that's amazing. So I found you, and there's, for people that are watching on video behind me, there's a Dr. Gabor Mate's book called The Myth of Normal, and you're in that book. And the book is amazing. The premise of the 500-page book, which I'm going to read 10 times in my life because I just love it. I love all his stuff. And we'll talk about him in a couple minutes. The premise of the book is that unresolved childhood trauma and programming from a child often brings on illnesses. And you were one of the amazing cases that were highlighted. And I don't remember if you said this, but I know certainly in that book, several people looked at their illness and said it was a blessing. It helped them. Where did you fall on that spectrum as blessing versus curse?
Well, I always say everything in life is either a lesson or a blessing. It's all perspective, right? Everything that comes our way. In terms of Gabor's book, it's really interesting and his mindset and his theories behind it. And it really fits. He's so fascinating with how he enlightens us all. But you look at our coping mechanisms that perhaps we develop each individually from our own quote unquote unmet needs. And trauma isn't necessarily what we always associate it with, right? Like abuse or complete neglect, but it's just unmet emotional needs. Like maybe you were left to cry as an infant. Maybe you always had to prove your worth to your parents. You felt like you weren't good enough. And so we all develop these coping mechanisms, or something happens to us and we just don't feel comfortable in expressing that. But we have to keep it a secret because, as Gabor will highlight, if we feel that fear of expressing it, what are we concerned about? That the person we're expressing it to, our parents, might not receive us with the same amount of love. It's this disconnect, right? So anyhow, we develop these coping mechanisms from it. For me, I ended up developing the coping mechanism of being really, really, really busy. And again, always somewhat trying to prove my worth through being busy. Mm. And I lived my life on this spinning autopilot hamster wheel almost. I attained a lot of success, but it was never enough. I had this multidisciplinary health clinic that I had owned and founded and subsequently even sold, and it was thriving. It was so busy. It was a booming practice. I loved it, but I was always looking, what's next? What's next? Even if I was on the beach with my kids, they could have sat by the beach and frolicked for hours playing with driftwood and making forts. But I would have been like, at the time, oh, TikTok, we've got 5 minutes to play here. Then we're going to run down the beach to Dunder Rave. Then we'll run back. Then we've got to do X, Y, Z. I was always on go, go, go. Never was I present in that moment because I always felt like I needed to have this busyness factor, I guess, to prove my sense of worth. And so it was interestingly through a lot of my conversations with Gabor that I was able to highlight that. And so when you say, was it a lesson or a curse? Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not foolishly just like, oh my gosh, life is so good. Those were brutal, absolutely brutal, gut-wrenching days. I've come to walk through some of life's most unimaginable indignities and not even thinking I had the strength to continue for another minute ahead and doubting my own abilities over and over and over again. But it is definitely 100% a lesson or a blessing. I apologize, because I live like the richest life now. It's so bright. It's so beautiful. And I could have lived till I was 200 before. And I've already outlived any of a life that I would have lived before in these short years. Wow. Since this prognosis of having 2 months to live. It was the best gift I could have ever received.
So Erica, do you believe that your unmet childhood needs was a cause of this illness that almost took your life?
Yeah, you know, I believe in a lot of contributing factors, right? Gabor also has another great book. I'm not sure if you've read it, called When the Body Says No.
I have.
And then being on this autopilot spinning wheel of life and not taking any time, as I said, from the get-go, I've really woken up. I've transformed from within in mindfulness and meditation and self-reflection. And it was a process I had never done before this, ever. And never did I look inwards. I was always helping outwards and wanting to help others rise, but never taking the time to look inwards and saying, when I said I hadn't complained of feeling sick or unwell, in retrospect, sure, Brad, I had tons of symptoms, tons. And I just completely overlooked it, always prioritizing others. But now I just have this like calm in my heart and from all of that. So I'm just so grateful for that awakening.
And someone that typically tries to always please others is a people pleaser, right? That's a shortcoming, or it's a coping mechanism in itself to try to prove, if I can keep helping other people, I can be worthy.
Yes.
Wow. Such amazing stuff here. So if you're listening to this and you have an illness, you have autoimmune, or you have rashes, or you have sicknesses that the doctors, Western medicine loves these two terms, autoimmune, and they love idiopathic. Idiopathic just means there's no known cause. And Gabor will say that there is a known cause. There's always a cause, because if your body is in sync and mind, body, spirit is connected, you're not going to have these issues. So if you're fighting for your life, or you're fighting with cancer or any of these issues, Western medicine typically doesn't tell you to go look at your stress level and go look at your childhood, but it can save your life. What do you think saved your life, Erica?
Well, again, I didn't really finish on when the body says no, but in my lack of self-reflection, I didn't hear the screams that my body had been screaming at me. Well, take it back. I guess I missed my body talking to me for a long, long time. Until then, it was like screaming with this leukemia. I missed all the signs and symptoms that were leading up to it and all the ways I could have rerouted my path beforehand. But, you know, I don't know, a gift from above. I was enveloped with worldwide forces of love and support, all of these awakenings and blessings in this like incredible transformation that just shifted the way I think, every thought that pops into my mind, the way that I see the world, the way that I see myself, the way that I see others, like green juicing, waving magic crystals. I think taking agency and being proactive over our own health. I'm always in my pursuits of coaching and speaking and my podcast, trying to help other people be the heroes in their own stories. I believe when we take agency over our situation and we believe that we have a role in our own success and not transfer that role just to a doctor or to somebody else, like we have to be accountable for our own success. I believe that plays a big part of it as well. But I don't know why I'm here today. I think if there were one simple answer, Brad, to eradicating cancer, cancer wouldn't be on this planet. If it were one simple thing that I did, I don't know if it's as simple as that. I do think, like I always describe, when we go through hardship, cancer, whatever it brings, like we're all connected by that unity of that common thread of pain, but our individual circumstances might be different. But we can all kind of go inwards in cocoon. And I always say, like, that cocoon is going to burst as it grows from wisdom and learning and growth. The cocoon, we want to burst it from the inside out, if that makes sense, not have it burst from the outside in. But we can do that by growing and expanding and learning. And so if we use these moments of struggle and hardship to do just that, to grow and learn, and we can grow and learn from anybody. It's when you're open to it, that's when it starts to click and happen. I'll give you one example as far as what I'm talking about. The first example for me, awakening per se, that came for mind over matter, believe it or not, came from this one lunch lady who had been coming in and out every day to bring my lunch. And she would just put it over on the windowsill. And she would always walk out. She knew I would never eat it. And then one day, my physician had been in the room just as she was coming in, and he turned around and walked out and closed the door. And I kid you not, Brad, she turns around and she's like, you saw him. You saw him close the door, right? And I'm like, uh-huh. And she's like, well, I'm not allowed to close the door. But now since he's closed the door and I'm in here, you and I can have a little heart-to-heart talk. And she puts her hands on her hips, and she means business. And she goes over and she grabs a banana that was on this tray. And she's like, you just need to look at this banana, Erica, because I've been watching you getting skinnier and skinnier. And you just need to look at this banana and say, banana, you look good. And you just need to eat this banana. And I was like, okay, I got it. I literally did that day. I wanted to make this lunch lady happy. You can learn lessons from anyone when you're open to receiving this. And for me, this was the very first moment of mind over matter for me.
So you see life in a completely different light now, and you don't need to have a near-death experience to happen, because I've lived that my last 3 years trying to get help for my son's anxiety. I went through and I looked at those childhood programming issues and the trauma that I went through, and I reversed that story. And just like you now, everything, like, I'm present. I have a fabulous relationship. My business is doing incredible. I'm in the best shape of my life. So just want everyone to know that if you need to change or want to change, it's possible. So are you in touch with the donors today, or you are? Oh, that's so amazing.
Yeah, I'm super, super lucky. So my donor from Germany, we actually planned to meet. We had a trip to go over to Europe when COVID first hit. So that was put off, but stay tuned. I think it's going to happen soon. And yes, I know the family that incredibly shared the gift of lungs with me as well. So I'm very, very blessed.
I don't know if it was in Gabor's book, but a little girl got a heart transplant. I think a little Arab girl got a heart from a Jewish girl. And at some point in her childhood, she asked for this candy that her parents were like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I may be messing up the story, but the point of the story was like a Jewish candy known to Jewish folks. So it's incredible. And I know you're in this realm too, on how things like that, transplanting can actually give you, you're taking a piece of that person. So you're going to end up being like that person a little bit. So freaking amazing. So
well, my blood type certainly changed and I became like him in that. My blood type, believe it or not, changed from O negative to A positive, which is a pretty great score on that test, right, Brad?
Oh my gosh, that is so amazing.
I always thought I would like German beer, but that never came.
The question I originally asked you, and we got not sidetracked, we had some amazing conversation here, is what did you learn from all of that? What are the greatest lessons you took out of all of this?
Gosh, greatest lessons. So a lot about that mind over matter really helps me in just about everything I struggle with or navigate even today. We don't have to just see it, feel it, and believe it. We have to like taste it, smell it. Like you literally have to believe in your success and envision it in every way you possibly can. You have to believe in your own ability to create your own miracles. And we can really do that. An attitude of gratitude can change your perspective and your mindset on anything in just a heartbeat. Even having what I like to practice is almost future gratitude for, okay, like when I'm 80 years old with my future grandbabies walking on the seawall, looking back on all that I've accomplished through my life, I just feel that sense of pride and future gratitude for that moment that I'm going to get to experience. I believe in these laws of attraction and being able to manifest these things. Growth mindset, like I said about the cocoon, like anything, any hardship we have, I'm not saying it comes to us for a reason, Brad, but we can make a reason out of it. Like, I'm not saying that I did something wrong necessarily to get cancer, but we can all find meaning from that hardship when we walk through it. And we can grow and we can learn and we can rise and elevate ourselves and learn to fly higher than we could have ever flown before. Being really real, the power to be really vulnerable. That was hard for me at first. At first, I was almost having this fake toxic positivity. Everything's going to be fine. I'm going to be great. No problem. This is just a blip on the path. And I was entertaining 60 people in my hospital room every day. And then one day, fast forward about 7 weeks in, we had to hire this new nanny to help us care for our kids. She brings my kids in and all of a sudden I was struck. She was sitting in the corner of the room and struck by her presence. I was like, this complete stranger has access to our family's most vulnerable and most intimate of moments. It just seemed so wrong. And I watched her leave with my babies down. I could see from my penthouse view, she loaded them into my vehicle. And all of a sudden I panicked. I wept. I was like, oh my heavens, like I wanted to be the one taking them home. Is she going to get them home safely? Like, does she know what precious cargo she has in that car? Is she going to buckle their seatbelts properly? I watched my vehicle leave with my babies and I could do nothing. I felt institutionalized against my will. I felt trapped. And I turned around from the window. I was rarely alone in my hospital setting, but I wept and I wept and I wept for hours. And that didn't actually stop for about 4 days. I just kept crying. Not only, Brad, did I express the unexpressed emotion to that point about cancer and the diagnosis and all that had been ripped away from me, but I finally allowed myself the space to cry about that, but also about things in the past. Like we're talking about parents or I've lived a very blessed life, don't get me wrong, but bad breakups here and there, whatever it may have been, I finally allowed myself this space to be really, really real about it. And if you ask me one thing that could have saved my life, I think it was that. You have to think of the weight that that would have lifted. When we cry out our tears and when we finally allow ourselves the space to sit in those hard emotions, we process them, we experience them. We then in turn give ourselves like the self-acceptance and the self-love and processing that after. And it's so much lighter until we go through that process. It's like we're carrying this really heavy, heavy bag. Probably last but not least, always be of service. When we're of service in any way we can be, we elevate ourselves, not only the people around us, but we also elevate ourselves. Keep your sense of purpose in that service. Like I was saying, how I would get out of the hospital every day to pick up my kids from school and to make a dinner. Like that was brutally hard, but also it was my role in life. I didn't want anybody else to take over my job and get to be mom to these beautiful boys. That was my job. You can also just be of service by sharing a smile and helping to elevate somebody's day that way, if that's all you can do that day.
crying is incredibly therapeutic. I can't tell you the number of clients I've taken on that I asked them when on their first session, like, do you ever cry? And they're like, no. And you know, by the third session, they're crying a lot. Because what we often do, as Gabor mentions, is we stuff down these emotions. We press them down, which leads to depression, leads to anxiety.
Well, I very much agree. I don't believe it just leads to the mental health side there. I believe it's energy. And call me crazy, but I believe that not only transfers to mental health, but also to physical health.
Absolutely. You know, the whole book, yeah, agreed. So we either push it down or we have a tendency to reach for sex, weed, alcohol, pornography, shopping, excursions, whatever it is. And you said it, when you just sit with those emotions, let yourself cry. If you haven't cried in a couple of years and your life isn't going great, that may be one of the reasons. You need to get these emotions out. They're stuck in you. They're not going to do you any good. So speaking of Gabor, your knowledge and connection with him are super, super interesting. He's one of my favorite people on the planet, and he's really shaped me. How has his teachings influenced your approach to mental health and resilience?
Yeah, it all stems from self-compassion first, right? Shall we have self-compassion and self-understanding? We won't have human compassion for others. We can really see how that plays out. And he'll take us through some really great examples of, okay, so let's say something happened in childhood. I don't know what an example might be, but let's say at 12 years old, you have some unmet need happens and you're going through some sadness and you're not able to express that to somebody. When you're thinking about it in the context of yourself, you're like, oh yeah, like that's too bad for me, right? But when you actually shift this and say, oh my gosh, if this traumatic incident happened to my child, right? How would I feel about that? Okay. And then you actually think about it and you're like, oh my gosh, devastated. Like I would never want my 12-year-old child, like you picture them as being so tiny, to go through something like that. And then you look over here, oh my gosh, but that was me. Like, and there wasn't somebody looking out for me in that moment. And then you find like, you can fill yourself up with the love that perhaps you didn't receive at that time. And you can give yourself that hug that perhaps you would have really needed at that time. It's really this all-encompassing approach of self-compassion and then compassion for others.
Yeah. If I would have heard this all 5 years ago, I would have been like, you're crazy. He's nuts. Like,
I know.
How can unresolved trauma cause cancer? And now I get it. And how can this, I thought I had self-love for 47 years of my life, but when I look back at my two marriages that didn't work out and my use of weed and alcohol and my kids with behavioral issues and a poor relationship with them, it was like I was always looking for love outside myself and I was always blaming everything. It's my two wives. It's not my fault. Everyone smokes weed and drinks. Like, what's the big deal? And when you can go in and heal those wounds that have been around for so long and find that self-love and self-compassion, I know some people are listening as being like, self-love and self-compassion, that's so woo-woo. But you can continue thinking it's woo-woo and live the life that you may be living, which is suffering. Or you can be like, wow, what if this is the one thing missing from my life? If I could get self-compassion and self-love, everything can change. So I created a 3-minute 12-question quiz at bradchandler.com/quiz, where you can actually see, are these things affecting me? Do I have a bad marriage and do I drink too much or smoke too much weed or I'm overweight because of these things? Well, all change begins with awareness. So just go take this quiz. It only takes 3 minutes, bradchandler.com/quiz, and you can start your journey to possibly healing and changing your life and your families.
Awareness and also humility. Like being really humble about who we are and being really real about this is what I've taken accountability. And one thing I really admire about Gabor is he will do just that on a very public basis. I could have been more present with my kids when they were growing up, or like take accountability for who we are. And I feel like that self-judgment that we can all impose on ourselves, when we make it a conversation and we make it known and we own it to ourselves, then no one else can hold it against us. More importantly, not even ourselves. Like, we're all human. We all make mistakes, but owning it, it's such a powerful part in that process. I think it's a really important part to mention as well.
For sure. Forgiveness is one of the huge cornerstones of happiness. You don't have to, but it's going to serve you if you forgive yourself, you forgive those around you, because what you're holding against yourself, I promise you, it wasn't your fault. It is from these deeply buried subconscious mind, the subconscious thoughts that were buried in your mind. It could be from age 1, 2, 5, 6, whatever. So if you're struggling and you blame yourself all the time, just know that it's not your fault and that there is a different way and a better way. So Erica, on your website, risetoday.com, you mentioned equipping individuals with resilience and resolve. What are some of these tools and how can someone apply them to bounce back stronger than ever?
Yeah, kind of what we've talked about, right? Breaking it down, being of service, growing an attitude of gratitude to really shift your perspective, practice visualization and manifesting what it is that you want, and really being real, present, vulnerable, realizing that life is not infinite, right? Life is very finite, and that alone makes you more present instantaneously. When you really think about whether I was at the beach this morning on this beautiful sunrise, that's the last moment that I'm going to experience that exact sunrise. When you shift it that way, like everything I do now is I get to be here for this moment. And whether it's I'm cleaning a toilet, whether it's I'm working, whether it's I'm skiing down a mountain, I get to be here for this moment. And that word I get to is such a powerful mental shift. If that makes sense, it changes everything for you or just your perspective on anything. I still experience these moments of PTSD where I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I can still hear the beeps and the buzzes. And like I was in the hospital, I pat my bed frantically trying to feel for the bedside rails, the tubes that were once parts of me, the handcuffs that once held me captive. I'm in like a deep sweat. I'm like panting as if I'm just right back in the thick of it. And it's absolute terror when I wake up in these moments. And then I start to look for the white walls of my hospital room. But when we separated after this crazy journey, I painted my rooms this fuchsia color for these exact moments. And then I start to recognize that the walls are not white and that they're pink and fuchsia. And instantly I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm safe. I'm alive, you know? And I transfer. Eventually, I start to calm down and I realize my kids are down the hall. I'm out with them today and I was able, I get to do all these things with my kids. And instantly I transfer, oh my gosh, these moments of like PTSD that are very clearly post-traumatic stress to what I refer to as my gratitude attacks. And I'm overwhelmed and full of gratitude for the moment of today and the gift of today and that I get to live today.
Amazing. If everyone could just live that way, I think there's something like, I could be off on this number, but 78,000 people are going to die tomorrow. How many of those 78,000 people know they're going to die? I don't know how many, but it's something to think about. It's something to think about. This is going to be my last sunrise or my last sunset. So just treat everything like it's the last thing. And man, watch how your life shifts.
10 out of 10 of us are going that direction. Like all of us, none of us are going to be escaping it. So realizing that and living as though life is really finite, it just helps you elevate so much.
So tell us as we wrap up here, you now help people, you have clients. Tell us what you do with those clients. And maybe if you could share one of your biggest like success stories, that would be cool.
Sure. So the path that I've evolved on, this speaking path and coaching path and podcasting and writing and all the pursuits that I'm doing really just naturally evolved. Originally, all my physicians invited me to speak at various conferences, international medical conferences. And so that's how the speaking progressed. And then I was approached by others who were navigating hard days with divorce or cancer. Erica, how did you get through it? And so I had developed this 8-week program to help just share all of the awakenings that I had learned along that. The podcast also has some really great tools and stories of overcoming.
What's your podcast? What's the name of it?
The Rise Today Inspirational Podcast. Thank you. And really great tools of individual stories. I've interviewed Gabor on the podcast. Also Gabor's son, Daniel, who had co-authored Myth of Normal. But no, I love coaching. It's a one-on-one, really personal experience. Having understood the depth of hurt and loss and grief that can come with life's trials and tribulations, I feel I really connect on a really deep level and people become very open with me very readily and we can really create some powerful transformations. It's even just in seeing how they view the stress around a recheck, let's say, or their daunting prognoses and how they envision that and how they can actually maximize each and every day that they are given. It really changes the perspective for how they're seeing their days too. We talk about a lot of people who are going through terminal illnesses and we take them through a process that connects them on a deeper level with their families and expresses a lot before and after. It's a very powerful program.
So how about a client success story?
Oh, sure. So anyone in particular? Okay. So a young woman has been battling leukemia and she has been going through really difficult times, saying that only treatment available to her was a trial drug. And she, at 31 years old, was very down and depressed and asking a lot, why me? What did I do so wrong? And we really transformed her mindset to what had she done not so wrong, but so right to prepare her for this journey ahead. And she's had some miraculous results as we've gone through. She just attained remission and unexpectedly, wow. And she is just over the moon. So yeah, she's waiting for her bone marrow transplant now.
I love it. So if you're going through an illness and you are not a believer in this stuff, I would just question to say, what if I did switch my mindset? Because you and I know, Eric, and a lot of smart doctors out there, that your mindset and stress really does fuel cancer. They say they don't know if it causes it, but they certainly know that it fuels it. So you might want to just take a different approach. And again, you did nothing wrong, but I love how you said that. What did you do right to prepare yourself for this? So, well, that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Erica, thank you so much for joining us today. That was absolutely awesome. Your story is such an inspiration to me and to so many other people. So,
oh, it's been a pleasure to be here with you, Brad. I know we've been trying to get out on the books for a while, and I thank you for your patience. And I have to say to your audience, I was really impressed when you reached out because, as you said, Gabor's book is really large, a long read. And I always know that people are avid readers when they get to the end and catch my story and when they reach out to me. So I'm impressed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Anyway, that concludes another episode. If you like the show, please help us spread this word and this message that can help so many people by sharing it, liking it, rating it, reviewing it. And until next time, love heals all.
All the best. Rise today, my friends.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.